Facts allow you to make decisions in unpredictable times. Get the facts you need from the Wall Street Journal. From free coronavirus updates to daily deep dives in our podcasts and videos, WSJ is a trusted source in uncertain times. Visit WSJ.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, July 10th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for the Wall Street Journal. As schools get ready for the fall, many officials are considering remote learning options. But not everyone has access to the internet at home, and that makes online learning a tricky proposition. Our reporter James Rendell will join us to explain how leaders in Chicago are trying to address that digital divide. That's after these headlines. The company behind TikTok is looking at possible changes to the video sharing app's corporate structure. Senior executives at ByteDance, which is based in Beijing, have been discussing options like creating a new management board or establishing a TikTok headquarters abroad. It's being seen as part of TikTok's bid to distance itself from China and appeal to more American users. By the way, we talked about some of this on the show yesterday, in case you want a deeper dive. WhatsApp says its business app has 50 million monthly users. The stat reflects a tenfold increase since just over a year ago. WhatsApp also said that it's added new features to make it easier for companies to communicate with customers on its platform. The move is the latest effort by Facebook, which of course owns WhatsApp, to offer more e-commerce tools for businesses. And in response to the pandemic, lots of industries have been speeding up their adoption of new technologies. There are the obvious ones that you probably are already aware of. We've seen office workers using more and more video conferencing software, for instance. But this one might surprise you. Tyson Foods and others in the meat processing industry are now exploring whether robots could make their jobs safer and more efficient. But our agriculture reporter, Jesse Newman, says bringing automation to the industry is actually pretty challenging.
So meatpacking currently is something that is done by hundreds of workers in a vast meat processing facility. And it typically includes a lot of workers standing really close to one another on a processing line, all working to disassemble an animal carcass. Meat companies say that automating their plants is a really hard thing to do, in large part because robots just haven't been developed yet that have the same ability that humans do to break down these carcasses that vary from one another in size and in color and shape. So, you know, it turns out that unlike something like car parts, which are all uniform, robots have a hard time with soft material like flesh that varies. And there's other things that are difficult for robots to handle, the low temperatures that are used in meat plants and things like blood splatter. These are just hard conditions for robots to deal with. So meat processing workers can still do certain jobs better than machines can.
Up next, how leaders in Chicago are trying to close the digital divide in time for school in September.
Robotics, artificial intelligence, augmented reality. The future is here. Listen to Tomorrow, Today, with the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything, the podcast that takes you to the front lines of science and tech and shows you what's coming next. Look ahead. What do you hear? The Future of Everything. From the Wall Street Journal. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Most kids are on summer vacation right now, but schools have some homework to do. They're getting ready for September, and the possibility that back to school will look completely different this year. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have released guidelines to help keep kids and teachers safe when they're in classrooms, but some places have announced hybrid plans that combine that in-school experience with online learning. Problem is, we've seen in the past few months that online learning isn't a perfect solution either. One of the big issues is that a lot of families don't have access to the internet at home. In Chicago, leaders have come up with a plan to address that. They want to expand broadband access. They're calling it Chicago Connected. Here to tell us more is our reporter, James Rendell. James, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So to start, what does internet access look like in Chicago?
Yeah, so basically, this plan was kickstarted by a study that was conducted by a nonprofit called Kids First Chicago in April that found that in particularly disadvantaged areas of the city, there was a very high proportion of school-aged children who didn't have access to broadband at home. If you look at areas like West Englewood, for example, 46% of households don't have that. And actually, those numbers don't even tell the full picture. If you go block to block, it can be as high as 80%. Obviously, this is a problem for a number of reasons, but for school children particularly, it means that their access to remote learning materials or video conferencing and everything else just is non-existent.
Yeah, 46% is a huge number. So let's talk about the proposed solution, Chicago Connected. Who's behind this project and how are they planning to address these issues?
Yeah, so Chicago Connected is a public-private partnership. The idea of it is that using a mix of funds from Chicago public schools and also from private donations from people such as Citadel and Ken Griffin, from former President Barack Obama and a number of other people, that you can actually fund dedicated broadband connections for at least 100,000 school children for 4 years.
And mechanically, how are they going to do that?
So they're working with the internet service providers in the city, specifically Comcast and RCN, to actually put in wired connections. So the city had put some measures in place before this, such as providing hotspots for a number of families, but they often found that, you know, 4 or 5 people trying to access one hotspot is problematic at best.
James, the school year in Chicago is coming up fast. It starts in about a month and a half. So is this something they can implement before then?
Yeah, they're starting this week in terms of identifying which families are eligible and contacting them and rolling out connections. It works on a small scale, for sure, in Chicago, and they're pretty confident they can get this in place by the time the school year rolls around.
Chicago isn't the only city that's facing this problem of schooling and internet access. How does this plan compare with initiatives elsewhere in the country?
Yeah, the issue of digital equity is something that has been recognized, I think, on a national level. A number of cities have had studies performed either by municipal authorities or by nonprofits inside their city limits that have identified similar numbers that we see in Chicago, elsewhere in New York, Los Angeles, Houston, Detroit, for instance. There's also a huge issue with internet access in rural areas, not just in urban areas. And people are hoping that this combination of private funding and public funding is something that can be replicated in different cities in order to spur motion at a grassroots level for this kind of connectivity and addressing this digital divide, rather than waiting on a federal level for something to come through.
You mentioned that public-private partnership that's kind of critical to Chicago Connected. Is this really replicable in other cities or in rural areas even? What would that look like?
Sure. I mean, Chicago Connected is very distinctly Chicagoan. In its construction, you have a number of people with very definite ties to the city and everything else, but you have that elsewhere. You know, in most cities, you have a class of industry or high net worth individuals who do have ties to the city can do this. It becomes more difficult in rural areas where you don't have that support network necessarily, or that kind of stratification of society where people can contribute towards it. And that's the area where you really need government intervention.
Yeah, and in the meantime, without government intervention, what are the stakes here? What does it actually mean if students can't access the internet from their homes?
So access to the internet, I think, is recognized as being a crucial aspect of modern society. It's not just for education, but it affects many other different areas of the way we interact with each other, whether it's looking for information on things like the pandemic or searching for jobs or anything else. But I think at a key level, and what a lot of people I spoke to for this story recognize, is that this issue tends to disproportionately affect people who are living in poverty. It also tracks very closely along racial demographics as well, with Black and Latinx communities being heavily affected. And when it comes to issues of equality and opportunities accorded to minorities, everyone I spoke to said that solving that problem really starts with education. So if you can't get that right, you have no hope of getting anything else right. And that's really what they're trying to help with this program, is ensuring that disadvantaged children do have access to a quality education.
All right. Our reporter, James Rendell, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And that was your tech news briefing. We've got more tech stories on WSJ.com, so check us out there. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us. It really does help. Production assistance this week came from our intern, Nora Eckert, and I'm your host, Amanda Llewellyn. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great weekend.